it's time to be wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom with all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. 3-2. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in the TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:09 here in the city of Philadelphia on a Friday, a steamy Friday evening, and we're in freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it, and you can always do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and it's 8:14 again in the city of Philadelphia. Before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I guess for aging biological being, you know, I'm doing all right with all this steam, this warmth that's going on right now.
Yeah, well.
I got a little frightened the other day. I had to tell you, Elliot, that boom, 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 boom that was going around here around Philadelphia, I did not understand. But other than that, everything's good.
Yeah, they said that phenomenon was called a derecho or something like that. That's what they termed it as far as weather. But they've had some derechos going on all week here in Philadelphia and other parts of the country, too.
Hey, if the shift is like a titanic shift. It's supposedly happening at the core. I'm hoping it's happening at the core, especially for us Black folks and, you know, around the world, really, but definitely here in Philadelphia, that it's happening at our core, you know, a shift, because that's what we need to do, have a shift in order for the acquisition of power, doing something different than what we've been doing.
Yeah, and that's the key, that we have to come up with solutions to move our people forward, not other people. No other people looks for other nationalities to help them come up with solutions to free their people. No other people does that. No other people intend to do that. So these solutions that we have to come up with, we have to come up with ourselves. And we have to free our minds enough to come up with them. And when I'm talking about free our minds, Richard, I'm talking about free our minds from these views, these clouded views that some of us have acquired since we've been here in this country 400 years, some less, some maybe a little more. But since our exposure, we need to come up with other solutions and a different mindset to look at these problems with a clear mind and a vision for freedom that our ancestors had when they were brought here. We were brought here as free men and women and became enslaved. None of our people had intentions on being here, adapting themselves to what was going on here. Our people wanted to be free when we came to these shores because we were free people before that. So in order to come up with solutions, I think we have to take our minds back and ask our ancestors for guidance, because they can show us the right way to go. That's if we allow it. But if we allow other people to dictate the parameters of how we move our people forward, then we're going to be always shifting in the wind, almost like a sail in the ocean, going with the tide here and there. We just can't allow that for the sake of not only our people, for our children and our future generations. We cannot allow that.
That's a definite. And you know, one thing you do when you're opening that and saying about freedom, you know, that's one thing that we as African peoples in North America, even though they wrote it in their constitution, about freedom, and it was as they seen it, we the one that actually defined what freedom was. Our experience, our blood, sweat, and tears actually, you know, helped define, and our resistance to enslavement is the definition of freedom got flustered out from being some grand idea to some practical reality, you know, just based off of how we came into this here particular experiment called the American Project.
You know, Trump today had an address, and I caught the tail end of it, and I think he was kind of touting the jobs report, if I'm not mistaken, Richard. I don't know whether you saw any of it.
No, I didn't see that.
And talked about the recovery that has happened in May. And he used, boy, I'm telling you, some of these folks, and it don't surprise me when I hear him say things, because he's, you know, some white folks try to kind of mask things when they talk, and they mask their intentions. But when he talks, he's just brutally ignorant a lot of times when he talks. Mm-hmm. And it's just, sometimes it's really funny to me. Some people, they act like they're really bothered when they hear this guy. But he's funny to me. It's almost like watching Saturday Night Live or something like that when he's up there. But he said something today when he said George Floyd would be happy about these jobs reports that just came out. Now, let me read from just a little paragraph from this published report dealing with this latest job figures that came out for May. It says, headlines across the internet repeatedly pointed out the celebration of the jobs report for May that was released Friday morning. But the good news of the jobless rate dropping did not extend to Black workers, as the new data show their unemployment levels went up last month. May sees the biggest job increase, a 2.5 million as the economy starts to recover from the coronavirus. America's unemployment rate falls to 13.3 as the economy posts surprising job gains. And unemployment rate dropped to 13% as the economy picked up jobs as the states reopened. As if the spike in unemployment was not caused by the coronavirus pandemic that has disproportionately hurt black people, any mentions of black unemployment actually rising were buried deep in the retrospective news reports. To make matters worse, black people have seemingly been battling two pandemics, COVID-19 and police brutality, which has also spiked amid the public health crisis. Of course, on the surface, putting any dent in the unemployment rate is always good news. The amount of jobless Americans in April ballooned to 14.7% before falling to 13.3% in May. This is a comparison to April's 16.7% black unemployment rate, and it rose in May 2 percentage points. And while that rise was a tenth of a percentage point seems inconsequential to some, it could be seen as a metaphor for black people still losing while white America wins. An unemployment rate of nearly 15% should not constitute winning by any means, but the rate was trending in the right direction for white people, while the opposite was true for black people, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Economists are taking the latest job reports to be a sign of the economy recovering from the coronavirus pandemic that shut down an exponential number of businesses. But black-owned business has disproportionately suffered as applications for the Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program were not accepted. That fueled suspicion that black-owned businesses would not survive and consequently caused their employees to add to the growing black unemployment rate. So we see here, Richard, that it seems to be more of the same soup warmed over. Mm-hmm. This euphoria among white folks that, it's all the same. We all in this together. Black lives matter. Black lives matter. Well, it don't seem to be mattering because this system based in white hegemony and white supremacy is going to do what it do. And people are going back to work while, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, your joblessness rate is still going up. So when these companies come back to work, Richard, and they have to, if a restaurant holds 200 people and they have to cut that to 100 people because of the social distancing, and maybe 50 people lose their jobs, who do you think is the last hired and the first fired is going to be on the job?
Mm-hmm.
You and me.
Yeah.
And it shows by this unemployment rate. These figures didn't come out. The Bureau of Labor Statistics put these figures out. That white unemployment rate dropped and our unemployment rate went up. So when you see people celebrating that, and Trump and the others, all these, that the economy is back and moving again, well, it's moving all right. It's moving just how it's supposed to. And we see here that it talked about black-owned businesses suffered under the application of the Small Business Paycheck Protection Program. A lot of the applications were not accepted, which fueled suspicions that black-owned businesses would not survive. Well, listen. It's a lot. When that pandemic first happened, I applied for two of those pandemic grants and loans, and they said that they were under review, and they've been under review now for the past 3 months.
Mm.
So you know,
and as you say, that's for us, because I remember the discussion. And this is a while back when money was supposed to be coming to black businesses through the SBA, and people applied, and it was, I mean, you had to do some serious application work then. I mean, it was monstrous. You know, the money didn't come through. Or what came through to those who got it, it wasn't enough to carry out the plan that they had presented. So, you know, you look at now, it's just more of the same, you know.
Now, Richard, I asked a question last week, and the brother from Chicago, Brother X, had weighed in on it when he gave his opinion. When I asked about these subversive, these terms, subversive groups that was among this black protest, whether it was Proud Boys, Klan, Antifa, whoever, they was among these groups. And what was their motive for being among these groups? Brother out of Chicago, Brother X, said that he believed that their motive was to start some type of race conflict, which I wanted people's opinions on what was going on. But it seemed to be a perfect storm for these protest marches, because you had people that had been locked down for 3 months with this pandemic. The thing that happened, you know, with our people and these murders, they seem to happen every week. So it was nothing new in regards to how our people felt about this stuff continuously happening to unarmed men, women, and children. But for whites to be out in numbers and to be involved in these marches to the extent that they were, it would lead anybody to suspicion to their motives. If you're thinking and you're using historical perspective, if you're just out here just existing, then you would think that, okay, it's some type of epiphany happening, because you've seen people taking knees all over this country, even cops taking knees with average citizens. And it was really strange, because less than 3 years or 3 years ago, the football player Kaepernick took a knee in relation to abuse that was going on and police murders. And he was vilified by the white American public and some blacks because of his disrespect for the flag. And he's a troublemaker, rabble rouser. And they basically ran him out of football and the profession that he was in and that he loved doing, ran him out of the game. They saw something adversely wrong with him taking a knee in reference to what he was doing. They changed the dynamic to why he was doing it, when they knew clearly why he was doing it. But now, all of a sudden, 3 years later, cops is taking knees, along with the average John Q. white public taking knees all over. They don't see nothing wrong with it. It's never any mention of him. They never talk about him. So when you have an opinion that a lot of these moves are disingenuous, we have to look at this a lot of these things with a jaundiced eye, if you're consciously looking at what's going on and weighing the moves of everybody involved.
Yeah, which raises the question. I mean, you know, the other question as far as, now you see, I'm going to call those that you described, you asked the question on, as shock troops, right? They, you know, if as you say, Brother X enunciated, was to create a race war, you know, at least these shock troops, they come out. But it still raises the question, and they come out. And they have been coming out, right? I mean, that's what that whole thing of, was that North Carolina when they had that big thing in, was that 17? The march that the white nationalist groups did, and, you know, and they had, and the white female got killed, you know, got hit by a car and whatever. You know, like, why now? is it just Trump or is it something else? You know, that's, I guess, you know, because it's just escalating on that side. But look at the response, the reaction. Now you got, as you say, you know, they're coming out for, they're going to, first it was they put prison reform. Now it's the police reform. Black people been raising questions around that, the need for that all along. But now some movement on that. What is that? Why now? I guess that's what I'm posing. Why now?
When you say why now, as far as what? The participation?
As far as having to where that these here groups are changing the white general public. Now, it's not even opinion, right? Their young people are being as activated. Like, they were at home and now they're on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But, you know, why now? Now they sat home for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And now this gave them something to do. And now they come out with something to do, which is supposedly dealing with a systemic cultural crisis that black folks been living with for over 400 years.
Exactly. What is this epiphany that have come over Europeans? I think, Richard, it's a perfect storm. And I'll repeat it. It's a perfect storm. You had other people involved in that march that clearly don't have black people's agenda in their minds, because there was other people involved in those marches. I think they arrested some guys here that supplied dynamite to black youth here in the city. I think over 50 ATMs was blown up. In fact, one young man got himself blown up when he was trying to light a dynamite stick. Now, previous to this, because you didn't see violence in these communities, Richard, but I've never seen, that maybe some other listening audience in some other areas of the country can attest to, young blacks in these neighborhoods throwing dynamite or having dynamite. But they had dynamite here in Philadelphia and was blowing up ATM machines. But they arrested a guy that was supplying the dynamite. But they never showed the guy on the television, which leads me to believe that he was white.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, if he was black, his face would have been plastered all over the TV. Now, they did admit that this guy had been selling dynamite to black youth, or providing. I don't know whether he sold it. He provided dynamite. Just like they had those boulders that they were throwing through cops' windows. I don't know where they got these boulders from or the bricks. You know, when we were growing up, Richard, you had bricks all over because you had a lot of these communities was in shambles. So you could walk down the street and find a brick. But now, being in these neighborhoods being gentrified, you can't find no brick like that walking down the street. You just can't. And then they had these flares.
They show pallets of bricks. I mean, I seen, you know.
Wait a minute, pallets of bricks where?
They were located in strategic places.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Now, who providing all this? They had flares, that, you know, because you seen after they break the windows of these cop cars, looked like they were throwing railroad flares or nautical flares, and that would immediately set the car on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where were they getting these nautical flares? Where were they getting these bricks? Where were they getting the dynamite? It was other people providing these things. And then you had a ton of whites that was sick of being at home. And that was sick of this stay at home. You've seen it when they was protesting at these state capitals with their guns. They were sick of being at home. They couldn't wait to strike out at the government for keeping them home, shutting down their businesses, stay-at-home orders. So they were out there. And somebody else was out there, too. Let me share this information with the listening audience. And you can weigh this however you want, but I want you to look at it for what it is. The first thing I want to just read a couple of these things from it. This report came in Al Jazeera yesterday, June 4th. And let me share it with the listening audience. It says, U.S. corporations are being remarkably vocal about race issues. Most of the 50 largest U.S. firms have made a public statement in support of African Americans in the wake of the Floyd protests. Now, let's look at that, Richard. Let's critically look at that. It says 50 of the largest U.S. firms have made a public statement in support of African Americans in the wake of the Floyd protests. That sounds like an oxymoron to me. Mm-hmm. 50 of the largest corporations, a lot of them use slave labor, prison labor, modern day slave labor, a lot of them use, which is us in those prisoners, in those prisons. But they're in support of African Americans. And in the wake of the Floyd protests, let me read some of these corporations. It says, major corporations have moved with unusual speed. This is from a report in Al Jazeera. Major corporations have moved with unusual speed to position their brands and messages for America's latest crisis over racism and police brutality. Since May 25th, when the death of George Floyd at the hands of white police officers ignited protests across the country, all but a handful of the 50 largest companies in the U.S. have responded publicly to the events. While their response have predictably varied from business to business and industry to industry, one thing is clear: silence on race is no longer an option. Many companies worry they'll fall out of step with customers and employees if they don't take a stand. The rule of the day is just do it, says Karen Boykins Towns, a senior counsel at public relations and the media, contending that corporate silence, corporate silence is the same as complicity. Their messages have been blasted out under hashtags such as "We Are Done Dying," urging companies and others to show support for change. We are done dying. Mm-hmm. 50 U.S. corporations is touting these messages. We are done dying. Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned several corporations: Starbucks, J.P. Morgan, Chase. It says among the 50 largest companies, all but Abbott Laboratories, Berkshire Hathaway, Costco Wholesale, ExxonMobil, NVIDIA have made some sort of public statement in support of Black Americans as of June 3rd. Abbott's Laboratories issued a statement on June 4th. Almost $1.1 billion have been pledged to Black Lives Matter community rebuilding and outreach, and this doesn't include monetary promises without a set price tag. Goldman Sachs executive David Solomon released a transcript on LinkedIn on May 28th. "I am horrified by the continued attacks on the Black community, highlighted by the most recent in the U.S. with the deaths of Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd." On June 3rd, the company Goldman Sachs funded race and equality. So the Goldman Sachs executive, Richard, said he was horrified by what's been going on with Black folks.
Mm-hmm.
Viacom, on June 1st, turned 10 of its networks, including MTV, Nickelodeon, BET, dark for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, matching the amount of time police and Derek Chauvin kneeled on Floyd's neck. Ice cream maker Ben & Jerry's said Trump must disavow white supremacists and urge government leaders to call for unity with the Black community. Apple, Intel pledged $1 million for social justice causes. United Health Group extended an education fund for Black children, along with donating $10 million towards businesses and people in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Bank of America, $1 billion commitment over 4 years, is the biggest pledge to date. Target, which closed a half a dozen stores in Minneapolis because of the damage and looting, said it would distribute food and other supplies to help local businesses and grants to nonprofits. So, Maybelline, L'Oreal Maybelline posted support for equality and justice and promised donations to the NAACP with a message of financial support to Black Lives Matter. So we done seen several of these companies pledge millions of dollars, one of them, $1.1 billion, to racial equality groups and Black Lives Matter. Now, I've seen, because you don't watch the television, Richard, I've seen several things come across the television. And it's no words, I mean, it's no dialogue, it's just words. We stand in solidarity. And then at the end of the 30-second blurb, it says Black Lives Matter. So it's money being pumped into this. And you see all of those whites out there had signs, Black Lives Matter. All of a sudden, Black Lives Matter to Europeans. But let's look a little deeper behind this pledge, all this money to Black Lives Matter. I just want to, let me read, because if you go to their site, it talks about their planks. Let me read what it states here. And you be the judge. Listening audience, you be the judge. It says, we are guided, and this is part of the planks, Black Lives Matter. It says, we are guided by the fact that all lives, that all Black lives matter, regardless of actual or perceived sexual identity, gender expression, economic status, ability or disability, religious belief or disbelief, immigration status or local. We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead. Now, help me, because I don't understand what this has to do with our struggle against this white hegemony and so-called white supremacy that we've been suffering for over 400 years. I don't understand. See, the first line, we are guided by the fact that all Black lives matter. Okay, I understand that. But then you're going off on a tangent, which maybe you can help me understand this. And I'll repeat it for the listening audience, because this is in their planks. I'm not making it up. We are guided by the fact that all Black lives matter, regardless of actual or perceived sexual identity, gender expression, economic status, ability or disability, religious belief or disbelief, immigration status or local. We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead. We are self-reflective and do work required to dismantle cisgender, I don't know what that means, cisgender privilege and uplift Black trans folks, especially Black trans women, who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence. We build a space that affirms Black women is free from sexism, misogyny, and environments in which men are centered. We practice empathy. We engage comrades and intend to learn and connect with their context. Those planks there is that might lead somebody to scratch their head, especially if they're in these groups solely to uplift Black people. But you see that your planks and platforms is dealing with something else. And then you see that these 50 companies, 50 of some of the biggest companies in the United States, is pledging money towards these company, this group. They're not pledging money towards to uplift Black people. It's pledging money towards something else. Now, let me read this, Richard. This came from a published report on June 3rd. It was released in L.A., and then it was another one released in New York City. If I'm not mistaken, New York is the largest city in this country, and L.A. is second, if I'm not mistaken, or Chicago. One of them is number two. Maybe you know off the bat, Richard.
No.
This one is in L.A. It says this year's L.A. Pride will be a Black Lives Matter solidarity protest march. 50 years ago, L.A. held its first Pride parade. This year's plans for an annual festivity were put on hold because of the coronavirus. But Wednesday morning, Christopher Street West, the organization that produced L.A. Pride announced a big change in plans. A peaceful protest march in response to racial injustice is planned for Sunday, June 14th. It will begin at 10 a.m. at the intersection of Hollywood and Highland Boulevards and proceed to West Hollywood, where the parade normally takes place, ending in Santa Monica and San Vincent Boulevard. We encourage all the community members who believe that we must root out racial injustice and stand in solidarity with the black community and fight real reform and change in this country at all levels. Come out for the March for Justice. Christopher Street and the ACLU have challenged the Los Angeles Police Commissioner to get in court to get a permit for the city's first Pride Parade, which was in commemoration of the uprising at Stonewall a year earlier, where Martha P. Johnson and other members of the LGBTQ community fought back against oppression. So here's a big Pride Parade planned in L.A. for June 14th, and they're going to march with you. They're going to march with Black Lives Matter. This was their objective all along. They were playing chess, and some black people were playing checkers, especially in these marches. I mentioned last week, some of our people don't know these people's plans. They're out there marching with them. They got other objectives. Now it's starting to come out. Now this is in L.A. on the 14th. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Here they got another one planned. New York. Thursday, the Reclaim the Pride. Now, this other one was L.A. Pride, right?
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday, Reclaim the Pride Coalition, a group behind last year's inauguration Pride March, said that it will dedicate the Pride Month event with a Black Solidarity Parade on a Queer Liberation March. A queer liberation march for black lives against police brutality. The Reclaim Pride, which hosted the event in a large part to exclude police participation, is scheduled for June 28th and will focus on elevating and protecting black lives. John Carter, one of the group's organizers, said New York event will be fully responsive. Okay, let me stop there. So we see one plan for Los Angeles on June 14th, another one planned for New York on June 28th. Large homosexual and gay parades, but you going to be the centerpiece out front. That you going to be the one they pushing, but it's another agenda behind the doors, behind closed doors, or in the closet, so to speak. It's another agenda in the closet, but you the one that's out front. We got to stop being used by other people. We're more intelligent than that. Some of our people are
disorganized than that.
Okay. Some of our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. Now, I ain't making this up. These are published reports that these people going to use movements and use these people that's been murdered by these killer cops. Most of them white, some of them black. Being murdered by these killer cops, going to use these movements so they can sleep with men and sleep with whatever they sleep with, whoever they're sleeping with, animals, boys, whoever. Use their movements so they can have freedom to sleep with whoever they want to. Going to disgrace our ancestors by using these movements and use them as cannon fodder in the front. I'd like somebody's opinion on this in the listening audience. Maybe they participated in these marches. Maybe they was holding the Black Lives Matter banner. If that's the case, call up. Let me know whether you knew that these objectives was going on in the background. Maybe you did. Maybe you don't mind. But I'd like to know if any of our listening audience participated in these marches and held up a Black Lives Matter banner. Did you know that this type of stuff was going on? This extracurricular planning in reference to a movement that you're involved in? Did you know this was going on? And now that you do, what did you intend to do about it, if anything?
But Elliot, the thing that gets me, as you're saying, okay, and I do, in my way of thinking, I could see it. All right, you said 50 of the largest companies, right?
That's what the public reports. Yeah.
You name the companies. And then
I named a few of them. But go ahead.
I started going back to, you know, the discussions we had in, say, around reparations, but primarily around wealth, black wealth, right? Or what do black people have? Because in that report, it said that these things would hurt the customers if they're not addressed, right?
Yes.
Right? So which means that they're saying black people got money to spend. You just read another report that said black people is losing. I mean, the jobs, they're losing jobs. And then we've been interviewing people who are telling us black people have no wealth. That's why it's so important for us to put forward the call for reparations, right? So, these are 50 large companies. And I mean, Goldman Sachs ain't even, black people, they ain't got no investment dollars. If you ain't got no wealth, you can't invest. You got to have something to put in to make something. So what is it that what money are they going to lose because of what the police do? But they're funding the Black Lives Matter group. That's one period. That don't add up to me, right? That the one side, black people not having wealth and money, and the other side, large corporations, Starbucks, you know, where where black people are supposed to be spending their money. That don't add up. That's one. And then the other thing was that we know that these, if this restructuring, I'm on the assumption that the America, the white dominated society is in transition, is in a political and economic transition, and that's what's going on. And every time they have a transition, white people get displaced. I mean, we've been dealing with, I mean, the police issue we have been dealing with for 400 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Call them slave catchers, call them whatever you want to call them. It's no new thing. You know, only thing new is, and that ain't even new, because when they had the festivals around the period of lynching, they put it in the paper like it was a sports show. You know what I mean? Like they wrote it in detail what happened. So it ain't like this is something new, like what we're seeing as far as that. Black people being in prison, that's not new, right? I mean, even to get on, even if we say this, the slave ship or the enslaved dead ship was a prison, right? For that voyage of coming, you know, coming here. So that's not new. And it goes up to the what they call them, the chain gang and whatever. So for us, that's not new. The disruption for white folks, though, is that they don't have no jobs now, even though that's an interesting thing, too, that the job numbers go up. That means people are spending money. That's what they're saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And less than a week, they got people, which they came out with guns saying they wanted the businesses to open and they wanted to go on the beaches. They wanted to spend, right? They wanted to go to a restaurant. They wanted to buy it. I mean, in Philadelphia, they said they had to keep the liquor store open. They couldn't close it down because they didn't want these alcoholics running around here, you know, not having no liquor. So they got the money to spend, but they also losing jobs, their displacement. So where does this corporate money that goes into Black Lives Matter, which you lay out this, who are these people? A lot of them are college educated. And they're in solidarity with black people. You also read for Philadelphia that 50%, close to 30, I mean, black people, children can't even get on the internet because they don't have the finance and the Wi-Fi. The dropout rate is high, and especially in Chicago, L.A., New York, Philadelphia, major cities. We ain't even dealing with the South. So who are going to fill these positions that this $1 billion and this $1 million is going to be going to? Somebody got to get it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that money is supposed to be going to these people who is going to get this money is to service who? Now, it's supposed to be to service, if I heard you right, I might not have been listening correctly. It's supposed to be servicing black people who are being affected by the police brutality.
Yeah, supposedly. Yeah.
So that means...
Wait a minute. Let me kind of rephrase that, Richard. It says that a lot of the money, several of the companies said that they were pledging millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter.
Right.
Now, I don't, you know, it, you know, I just read what some of their planks and platforms are.
Right.
So it's under that banner, Black Lives Matter, and they're using Floyd and other people talking about they're tired of African Americans being abused. But it's, you know, billions of dollars is not going towards helping the black community. That's what it's saying.
I'm looking at, well, the money is going to go to somebody to do the work, even whether for the African American community. See, it'd be one thing if African American community and individuals was getting the money directly, right? But they got to give it to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who will do the servicing is the people in Black Lives Matter. Now, I don't know how many black people are in the Black Lives Matter, but it seems that the agenda item that you laid out, though we have black people who are meet that criteria, mostly they're white, middle income, quote unquote, middle class, college educated, primarily in arts and services, social services. Some might be in the health field, in social counseling. So in my mind, this Black Lives Matter money that's going to be the service to somebody, which I'm assuming is to service the black community, the providers are going to be these white, sexually orientated people, because then they would be working together. You know, I mean, you don't be afraid of me because I'm a transgender. Don't be afraid of me because I'm a white woman. Don't, you know, I'm here to help you. And that ain't no new thing, because if I'm not mistaken, University of Penn brought W.E.B. Du Bois in to write the Philadelphia Negro, that study. Those women were white, what they call them, Anglo-Saxons who were providing social services to black poor women and children. So the only thing different now is the criteria of the people, but they'll be the ones. It's not like, I guess I keep trying to, and I might be not making it clear, it's not like this $1 billion is going into black people's hand directly.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know what you're saying.
And these people who are going to provide this service is still in a position of a paternalistic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to help you because I'm empathetic of your plight. And therefore, you need my assistance. You need my support. I'm willing to rally with you. Now, I wasn't willing to support or even provide the symbolic optics when a black person just took a knee, as you said. He just took a knee. They wasn't willing. They ain't jump up out of those bleachers and say, I'm down with you, capping that. They didn't do that. But they're doing it now. And this wasn't just then. Those corporate executives, matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, the president of the United States talked to corporate leaders to tell them that what this man doing in relationship to his symbol of, it wasn't about the flag, of how black men and women were being killed by the police, that they were not supposed to support him. Matter of fact, they were supposed to get rid of him. In spite of black people having a different opinion. And did they get rid of him?
Oh, certainly they got rid of him.
These balls, that's juggling, as you said, it don't make sense. It makes sense when you're looking at, well, what's the end game here? We have, like, in order to be looking at playing chess, you have to look at the moves towards the end game, which is what they're trying to win. What is the end game? And I'm of the opinion, Elliot, that the end game ain't necessarily about black folks here.
No, absolutely not. That's my whole point of saying, reading these things. Absolutely not. Some of our people think that it is. Because, listen, we've all been scarred and affected by being here with Europeans. You heard Khalid Muhammad say on one of the collages that I play, when he says, I'm a slave. And he said, you're a slave. He said, unless we admit that we are slaves, we can never get free. Mm. We all been affected by being here. We have jaundiced thoughts towards one another because of our exposure to these racist societies. But just like an alcoholic, unless you admit that you're an alcoholic, you can never break that cycle. Mm. We've all been affected by this. It's clear to me, maybe it's not clear to other people, that these people are trying to use black people to push an agenda. It's clear. And if you don't believe it, just wait till June 14th and June 28th and look around and see who's out there. Now, believe me, I don't think a lot of the grassroots people that's been marching in these cities, especially black, is going to be in those parades. Mm. And then you're going to see some, though. Now, let me, you know, we see in Philadelphia, in a lot of these cities, and I'm going to share some other reports, but I'm going to stick here in Philadelphia right now because, you know, after those initial days, that initial Saturday, last Saturday, when they had the initial protest, it broke into violence. And the city readjusted some things. Now, I'm reading from a report on June 4th. And I'll read this. I'm going to take a brief break, and then we'll come back because we got some callers on the line. And callers can get involved, give up their opinions on what's going on in their cities, give their opinions on what I stated about in reference to this money being poured into Black Lives Matter and what their plankton platforms was dealing with. You can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Let me share from this public report here in the Philly Tribune. It says Philly to slash police oversight, anti-violence initiatives while increasing Philadelphia Police Department budget. This is from June 4th. It says Mayor Jim Kenney is proposing to decimate the city's main civilian police oversight board and a string of anti-violence programs while funneling nearly $23 million in new funds to law enforcement. Now, before I continue reading, Richard, That police review board that they, I forgot what year that they initiated that. Somebody had been killed or something had happened here. Mm-hmm. And they initiated it. Like I said before, these killings and all seem to happen every week, sometimes twice a week. But in fact, it was one report saying that a black person is killed every 28 hours. I think it was Malcolm X Grassroots Commission did a study on that. And I'm going to quote from that study in one of the future programs because it was some interesting statistics. Have you ever read that report, Richard?
No.
They did a report. In fact, Mark Lamont Hill was in an argument with one of those conservative white hosts on one of those shows and quoted from that report. So I read the report the other day. It's interesting. I'm going to read some of those statistics on the air sometime in the near future. But in fact, I lost my train of thought in reference to what I was saying. Oh, that they instituted that civilian police review board and supposedly had grassroots people from the community sit on this board. I don't know when the last time that board has met, what they come up with in reference to anything going on. Do you know anything about what's going on with that?
Not in Philly, no.
Okay. Well, it says here that it's proposing the decimation of the city's main civilian police oversight board, which it doesn't exist to me, and anti-violence programs funneling nearly $23 million of new funds towards law enforcement. It says while the city predates recent unrest spurred by the killing of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery, critics say boosting police funding at a time of widespread outrage over police brutality is a step in the wrong direction. Under the mayor's revised municipal spending proposal, which still must be approved by city council, the Philadelphia Police Department will be able to raise salaries and hire new staff. At the same time, the city is proposing to slash 18% of the funding for the Police Advisory Commission, its main oversight entity, and a WHYY Billy Penn review of budget documents found, and the city's anti-violence efforts would also shrink by 21%, a $2.5 million reduction that would be felt across several programs that serve at-risk black young people and their families. Only the fire and police saw increases. Kenny now has proposed a $790 million operating budget for the police. That increase includes not just $14 million in new spending, Kenny outlined in a revised budget, but also an earlier $5.2 million increase the mayor has sought in his first draft just a month prior. Separately, the administration outlined a more than $11 million increase to bring the Philadelphia Police capital budget to bring into the Philadelphia Police Department's capital budget, which funds building projects and infrastructure costs up to $62 million for the next year. This increase includes $3.7 million in new funds with the city. While we respect all options on this matter, the gravity of these issues require a boost in funding to carry out the administration's goals, Kenny said through his spokesman, Mike Dunn. Now, let me drop down a little bit here. Youth programs will be hit especially hard. As told, under the proposed plan, just over $9.5 million is allocated towards anti-violence initiatives, an investment equivalent to just 1.2% of the hundreds of millions of dollars earmarked for policing. The cuts to the Office of Violence Prevention, which operates out of the Managing Director's Office, will hit young people particularly hard. They include 50% reduction to a $1 million annual community grant fund and the elimination of two staff positions at the Office Mentorship Program for Black Youth on probation. Officials said youth who are receiving guidance through that program would be referred to the Juvenile and Adult Probation and Parole Office. Kenny's budget also calls for elimination of the Youth Violence Reduction Partnership, a separate intervention program that provides at-risk youth and their parents drug treatment, job readiness, services, and mental health counseling, the city officials confirmed. As the many budget revisions, the police department also tweaked its expenses from a previous year to at the book balancing cuts, striking $368,000 in money earmarked for unspecific gun violence reduction initiatives. That lump sum was a one-time investment for last year's fiscal budget. Let me finish up with this paragraph here. It says, much of the funding increase for the department will go towards officers' salaries. Blindsided by the coronavirus pandemic, the Kenny administration rushed in a one-year contract extension with the city's police union that includes a 2.9% raise for the employees. Dunn and the mayoral spokesperson defended the budget priorities, saying that they were informed by the experiences in the Great Recession of 2008-2009, when the city last faced a major budget crunch. So we see here, Richard, that in the midst of him saying he going around, he was in North Philly the other day, talking about he's going to pledge support to the black community. I don't know whether you saw that.
I heard it.
Going all around after these disturbances and insurrections and young people breaking and busting in stores and all, he's going to invest in the black community. You see that he done cut these funds that's supposed to be directed towards at-risk youth in the black communities. Cut these funds and gave it to the police department to build up the police. So if that's not a contradiction, I don't know what is.
But you know, Elliot, I had to say that, you know, before you go on a break. See, this is why we have to be organized.
Certainly.
Because the thing is, in hearing that, all I hear is the FOP. All I hear is the power of the FOP. And you know, even with the civilian review board. Now, I did get to hear Obama's part of Obama's, I'm going to call it a speech or whatever. And he laid out, and I can't remember everything, and I jotted down some things. But one thing that he said that struck me, you know, as far as, like, you know, the plan that they had in order to deal with the reform and whatever, was everything is local. But he mentioned that the DA, the mayor, the district attorney, you know, which the mayor put, and the mayor selects the police chief. This is all done and by local politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means supposedly by the vote of the people in directing who they want, who's looking out for their best interest. What he said was, you know, that struck me, you know, was the point of even the police. Review board, you know, even though it doesn't have a strong local participation. Now, for us as Black folks, that's where we should be. We should be totally in control. And as you're saying, totally in outrage that if it's funding, and you asked me, do I know anything about it? And I have to say no, even though I know from politicians, I know from journalists that they have said of the power of the Fraternal Order of Police.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why a lot of these police who create these horrendous acts get off is because the power of the Fraternal Order of Police. And we have not going head to head as citizens, as Black people who are abused by that union and its members in a day-to-day wet manner, we have not politically gone head-to-head with them. And we haven't gone head-to-head with them. Yeah, it might be fair, but it's definitely because we haven't organized.
Yeah, and the representation that have been elected by Black people don't want to take them on.
And they can't, because... Just, you know, they took down the statue of RZA, and I'll start with this. But there's one thing stick in my mind that I remember before he slumped over in the bathroom. The what's that? What they call it? Urban legend was RZA had a book. He had a book with names in it. And as the police chief, and as these police officers, they know who do what in this city, even themselves. And you know, you see how these little politicians get caught off, you know, for a ring or a couple hundred dollars or whatever. That's the ones that get set up. What about the ones that don't get set up? And we ain't even talking about the Black ones. We're talking about the white ones.
Listen, we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, oh, you know, before we do that, Joe Biden, this the other bigot that's running against the bigot that's in office now, he had an address in Wilmington. Now, he had an address here in Philadelphia. It's kind of ironic that when Obama was running for president, he had that big speech on race or something in 2008. He did it here. You remember, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Biden did a speech here. I think it was Tuesday. The day after a lot of the 2 days after a lot of the disturbances. Well, he was in Wilmington Monday at this Black church and had clergy all around. And he was talking to them about violence. And he's going to reform the police. And I think I got the audio. He said, you know, a lot of the police is trained to shoot, you know, in the chest. But, you know, he's going to initiate reforms if he's present, and he'll reform them where he'll initiate reforms where they'll just shoot in the leg instead of the chest. I mean, Richard.
They sharpshooters now.
I mean, you know, it was so stupid. What, you know, listen, some of these folks, when they talk to our people, they think you're a little less intelligent anyway, and they deal with you as such. But what kind of idiotic, and all of them people just sitting there listening to that gobbledygook, what kind of stupid, I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then looking at the response of the black clergy, all they could do was, after he was done with that stupid speech, is get up and look like they was having church. Oh, Lord Jesus, help Joe Biden defeat Trump. Put your hand on him, Lord. I said, you know, come on. It looked like this is right off a slave plantation. I don't want to detract or diminish anybody's prayers or in the church, but come on here with this foolish. It's time for this foolishness to stop. We need clear heads to move our people forward. If you want to do that type of stuff, then wait till Sunday and go into your churches of worship and hoop and howl and sing and dance all you want. But when it's time to work, then it's time to work. Leave that other stuff behind. We'll take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Freestyle Friday on Time for an Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
What 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Winning.
encouraged. Let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Green sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:38 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Freestyle Friday evening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Cynthia McKinney said, Richard, in that collage, let's call out the names of those people in our community and get busy doing something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we got a lot of names in our community that's working against the community. And we can do something about this. The power is in our hands to do something about this. You know, Dr. King said in the beginning of that collage, and it's something that I hope our listening audience picked up on, because it's something that's staring us in the face right now. And he was talking about when the people booed him off the stage, or booed him at one of those rallies, and the young people booed him because he had said he had encouraged them to have faith in America and in white society, and they seen what happened. He said their hopes had soared, but the dream that he told them had turned into a frustrating nightmare. He said he encouraged them to have faith in a people who too often proved to be unfaithful, and now the collision course is set. Now, he said that, what, about 8 months before he was murdered, right, Richard?
Yeah.
That last line of that collage, he said he encouraged them to have faith in people who have too often proved to be unfaithful, And so the collision course is set. And we've seen that collision course in a lot of these cities here, especially with black youth over the past two, three days. Encourage them to have faith in America and white society. Those are Dr. King's words. And have faith in a people who have too often proved to be unfaithful. He used an historical perspective when he came up with that analysis.
Mm-hmm.
We can't keep making the same mistakes. Those are prophetic words from an elder who was murdered by this government over 50 years ago. Right in front of our face. I want to share this other article, but what I'll do, I'll go to the phones here and bring a couple of calls, and let's go to 215. 215?
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, Elliot?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Richard. How y'all doing?
All right.
Praise be to Allah. Yeah, Brother Elliot, there's a lot going on, as you can see, that the plate is full, to say the least, and thanks for all the information, Elliot and Brother Richard, that y'all gave tonight with the different things that's going on in this country, because to say that our plate is full would be a gross understatement. First, Brother Elliot, and I'm going to ask you and Brother Richard, did y'all see where Matt Ryan, the white quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons, you know, it's the same city, as you know, I'm sure y'all saw the clip with a white cop slammed his sister to the ground, and she suffered a broken clavicle, and she went to school to be a dental hygienist or something like that, and I heard her, she was pursued for an attorney who happened to be black. They was talking to the white girl today on CNN, and she was saying how this cop just, you know, how he slammed her to the ground, and how she wasn't doing anything. She said, we was just protesting. We wasn't out there riding or looting or anything like that, and how she was slammed to the ground. Well, anyway, Matt Ryan, I guess, the white quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons, who have ties to the Philly area. Ellie, maybe you, Richard, could explain to me what this means, because I mean, he's supposed to donate $500,000 to the black community, and I'm like saying, well, what is he doing? In what way? I mean, is it supposed to do what, or who is being donated to? You know what I mean? That's what I'm a little in the dark about, Ellie and Richard. You know.
Well, I mean, it could be a couple of different. It could be the NAACP. It could be Black Lives. It could be Black Lives Matter. I just told you that. Look at those companies giving millions of dollars to that organization, and you can see what it's really their real agenda is.
Mm-hmm.
According to their own writings, the real agenda is not you. That's who they hold up front. Just like they've been holding the picture of George Floyd all over. You see his image all over. This country could care less about a George Floyd or anybody that looked like George Floyd.
Of course. No question about that. I'm being rhetorical when I ask y'all that, because I know sure what that pretty much details, but I just was like, sounded just kind of still somewhat, interesting to say the least, that he would say to the black community. I'm like, is he donating $500,000 to the Nation of Islam? I think not. You know what I mean? So obviously, you know, so I'm like saying, you know, to the black community, that can be so broad and everything. I mean, who are the black community you donating it to? You know? And then speaking of Black Lives Matter, did you and Richard heard about the system up in D.C., Mara Bowser, she supposed to name the street up there called Black Lives Matter Plaza?
Yeah, I seen that.
You saw that, Brother Richard? Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, you know. But one thing is just, what they fascinates me, Brother Richard and Brother Ellie, is that all of a sudden now you got all these so-called woke white players, especially in football. Haven't heard much from the white NBA players or white Major League Baseball players. But now I see all these so-called woke white players. They all of a sudden, you know, they discovering that black people have been victims of police brutality and police oppression. I'm like saying, well, you know, where was these guys all these years? Where was these same white players, and even the black ones for that matter, when Colin Kaepernick took his, you know, like Elliot, you said earlier in the program, when he took that knee and stuff to protest against police brutality and oppression, and it cost him his career. Where was all these white players and even black players then? You know what I mean? It's just amazing. I was something that they saw. And Elliot, I don't know if you and Richard saw this collage they got of black players now and stuff. Now all of them, all of a sudden now they all speaking out. They even got my man to play for the Dallas Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott, and now he's speaking out. They all did a collage.
Wait a minute. They had Prescott. Prescott spoke out the other day. Now Prescott, yeah. if you remember when Kaepernick was kneeling, and that Jerry Jones told all those black players on the team, hello.
Yeah, I
got a little interference in your background. When
you're a little better now.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. When Jones gave that edict to the black players on that team that they better not do no protesting, he was vocal. Him and Ezekiel Elliott was vocal, saying we ain't taking no knee, we ain't doing that. But mm-hmm. now all of a sudden he understands he's ready to give money towards black organizations when they should have been doing this all along. Mm-hmm. But listen, exactly. These white folks, they like to, because, you know, when things happen to black folks, the first thing they do is run to them and ask them, do you forgive him? Mm-hmm. So I guess in their mind, they feel as though black people have some type of, or get some type of rise in hearing you say, I'm sorry. So all these mm-hmm. white players, all of a sudden, they're sorry. I think that white quarterback from New Orleans apologized about 2-3 times in one day.
That's right.
Hey, I'm sorry. And then went online talking about, I'm sorry. Those people ain't mm-hmm. sorry. Come on here. And to show you their insincerity, none of them, including the black players, is mentioning anything about Kaepernick. I haven't heard his name mentioned.
Exactly. And Ellie, you're absolutely right. That's where you see, yeah, this is where I'm drawing a line too, brother Ellie, with you, because like you said, if in the midst of all this sympathy for brother George Floyd, and rightly so, but where's the not to mention of Colin Kaepernick's name? Because I know there's all the collides that all these prominent NFL players like Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, Patrick Mahomes, what's the brother play for the Saints, Michael Thomas, and so on and so forth. All of them making this collide. And guess what all of them basically saying? I'm George Floyd. I am George Floyd. I could be George Floyd. Then the one brother would say, I'm Breonna Taylor, the assistant in Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm saying all this.
Oh, yeah. Listen, we all know that. They just finding that out, that they're George Floyd?
Exactly. And like you said, all that is good to say all those things. But like you said, how can you not mention a brother who took the courageous stance, not to mention his name? See, I would give these brothers a lot more credit if they all said, well, you know what, I'm saying George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, rightly so, because these are recent victims of white racism and bigotry and police terror, but I can't mention Breonna Taylor and George Floyd without mentioning brother Colin Kaepernick. If one of them said that in a collage, I would give them more credibility, Ellie. You understand what I'm saying, Ellie?
Certainly.
Do y'all think the language is from the agents or from them?
You know, Rich, that's a good question, Richard, because again, that went to my mind too, brother Richard, because like brother Elliot always say, a lot of these guys, they like almost like a mannequin or like a like somebody pulling the strings.
Well, you could be right. In fact, I would bet that you're right, Richard. Because all of these mm-hmm. white quarterbacks, all of a sudden, that's been making statements. You know, they've been instructed either by their league, and I think it's more the league than their yeah. Agents. It's the league that's mm-hmm. telling them, "Oh, make these statements."
Mm-hmm.
Because
I agree with you.
And with this here, since this especially the canceling of the game, all games and whatever, do you think that the leagues feel a competitive edge? I think was that the basketball was trying to make a deal with, was that China they were going to, and they had a big going back and forth about them creating, is that a league they were trying to create in China or in some other country? Is that the NBA?
Yeah, NBA, you know, basketball, like a lot of these sports, be global now, Richard. So, yeah, I think there was some talk of the NBA expanding into having a league over, like, in China and places. Like, in those countries, brother Richard, those people love basketball, man. They basketball is such a global sport that it's popular around the world. So there was some talk about that. I forgot exactly how it was proposed, but you're right, Richard. There was some kind of talk to that effect. Yes.
And I'm just wondering, you know, does these owners I mean, are they, would they be, you know, like this here, what is going to be the effect, and how long is this, how many cycles is this effect of six distancing and going to stadiums, you know, playing these sports, compared to, and then trying to expand into new revenue streams going into other countries. And here again, I mean, right now the black ball players are in all these sports. It, to be able to utilize this, like every, like you're saying, Elliot, Black Lives Matter, to utilize this in order to position themselves as a compassionate owner, so that they can be able. Because the thing is, I guess I'm raising a question: is this whole theater about expanding to show we're treating black people better now? We understand.
Well, you know, Brother Richard, it's so ironic, Brother Richard, you raised that question because you're onto something there, Brother Richard. You're very profound because, I know you and Ellie, y'all keep up with things, y'all stay on top of things. Well, as we speak right now, the United States, just like it says, to show our history repeats itself, the United States right now, see, again, this white media that we, in America, like the Minister Farrakhan, I always say white people's racism and deceitfulness is manifested through this news media. They keep people ignorant in this country, black and white and stuff. Well, you haven't got no play in the media, Holly, in the mainstream media. China and Iran and Russia and other countries have roundly criticized the United States.
Right.
And over the handling of not only with George Floyd's brutal murder, but Breonna Taylor and others, Ahmaud Arbery. And they said, how dare you lecture us about human rights violations when you treat your own black citizens as less than human beings? This has been pretty much a big thing in those countries I just mentioned. And, of course, like I said, the mainstream media has hardly touched it because that's what they always do. And it's the same thing back during Paul Robeson's era, how Russia and China and countries like that, they was able to get a lot of mileage out of that because the United States was, again, showing the hypocrisy. It was going around the world back then, as they are now, lecturing other countries about human rights violations when they were shooting water hoses on black children and dogs for black men, women, children peacefully marching. You know what I mean? See, this country, again, always get caught with their pants down, so to speak. You know what I mean? The same country that had no problem lecturing other countries about human rights violations, but during the Malay massacre, they lined up innocent Vietnamese or Cambodian men, women, and children who was non-combatants during the Malay massacre with that thug, that white thug, Lieutenant Cowley, and just mowed these innocent people down, just shot them down like they was... Oh, man, it's the city they shot them down like they was animals would be a gross insult to animals. I mean, they shot these people down like they was nothing, and these was non-combatants. So this country always get caught with their pants down, so to speak. Well, you know what I mean?
I'm just, and especially with sports and taking, and this is where I wanted to always be going with this, is that they're saying China is their number one enemy. And as you mentioned with Paul Robeson, at that time, Russia was. And the Cold War was initiated there. And that's why the whole thing of lynching, the whole thing of integrating the military was the resolution, I think, that came out of that. I believe that was Truman, that eventually, because of the image and that United States had in being after World War II, or being, you know, the global, quote, demonstrating the global leader. Well, here now, it's not Russia, it's China.
That's right.
And China I don't follow the sports, but aren't you seeing slowly the basketball players becoming Chinese?
No, not really. No, you got one or two, but no, it's no influx of Chinese players in basketball.
Now, Richard, it's funny you said it. They're not like Ellie just said, they're not having no Russia Chinese players. What you said in there, and I'm sure Ellie, you've been paying attention to this too, is a lot of white European players. That's what they're pushing for, to get these NBA jobs over these black players that's coming out of the hood. Now it's been this big push. They try to get a European player. If he has any kind of skills, whether he comes from Ukraine or whatever European country, he's hyped. He automatically put up there on a pedestal and stuff like that. Because you remember years ago, you had a white boy called a local sports station, Elliot. You know the ignorant, you know that white ignorant, you know the station whose call letters it stands for WIP, which stands for white ignorant people. With a white boy called up the station, and he said straight up, I never forget it. About 25 years ago, I was talking to brother Johnny Sapp about it. With a white boy called up and said, I'm a basketball man. I've been following ball back since they had the old Boston Celtics with Bob Cousy, and I loved basketball when it was all Jews in the league. He said, I'll be damned, I'm gonna pay my hard earned money to see a bunch of niggas, high-paid niggas, run up and down the court shooting the basketball until they get some more white players. I never attend another NBA. And the white boy came on the air, and he apologized, you know, the producer for letting it get over the air like that and stuff. But the white boy said it straight up, and that's the sentiment that you have in this league and stuff. They see all these high-paid brothers making all these millions of dollars playing ball, and they don't like that. So when they can get them a white boy that they think, and even if he can just play a little bit, believe me, he's going to be hyped up. Why he had all that controversy with Larry Bird? Not to say Larry Bird wasn't a good ball player, but they made sure they want to tell you that he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Because when they get a white boy that they think they can play, oh, believe me, he's going to be put on the pedestal. So these European players and stuff, if they find one in any of them European countries and stuff, believe me, they're going to push him over here in America. And if that brother is not, don't have LeBron James type skills, believe me, that white boy will have his roster spot. You can be sure of that. You know what I mean? You make no mistake about that. You know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I don't understand the, and we'll go a few more minutes and I'm going to take another call, but I don't understand the dismay and the some of these players being so perplexed when they hear some of these white players, the quarterbacks in particular, because they're the ones speaking right now, mm-hmm. when they come off key, how they're so surprised. You know, you had Malcolm Jenkins, who used to play here in Philadelphia, and now he's with another team. He was in tears almost on
yeah,
talking
sure
about
was.
His granddad
yeah.
participated in the, and he fought for this country and all this other stuff. Listen, that's different than these white folks that have been in the service. It's totally different. Their experience is totally different. 99.9, and this is my contention, 99.9% of black people that go in the service or that had been in the service, whether it was some of our ancestors or what, they went into service to try to pull their family up out of poverty, to have some type of better life in this racist society, or to be able to maybe go to school or something. That was their main objective to going into service. They didn't have no patriotic wanted to wave a flag, but if you flip the script, most of these white guys that go in just for that reason, to be patriotic, to have the opportunity to maybe kill somebody. And then when they get out to service, they come back to these police departments where they will have an opportunity to kill and abuse somebody. So the reason they're going into service is totally different than the reason that these young blacks or some of our ancestors went into this man's service. It's totally different reason.
And Ellie, I'll say this last thing so some of us can get on. And I close with this, Ellie. You're absolutely right, because I did some research. Because it's like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say, research bears you out and when you're dealing with subjects. I found out a lot of these white cops, and I use one white cop in particular, the one that stood on top of the car and shot out people in Cleveland, Ohio 3 years ago when he shot like 140-something times to this black couple who they had committed no crime, just riddled them with bullets and stuff like that. But many of these white men, cops, that have committed some of these murders on these police departments around America, come to find out a lot of them do have military background. So, I mean, they say, draw whatever conclusion you want to draw, but I don't think there's no coincidence that many of you check their backgrounds, you'll find many of these white cops that have murdered our people have a military background. And I'll end on that note, Brother Ellie and Brother Richard. Thanks for the time, my brothers.
Talk to you.
All right, peace.
Let's go to 602. 602.
Good evening. Yes, brother. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Brother Marcus. Yes. You know, last week, I think it was last week, I don't remember, we were talking about war. We were talking about military strategies. And I think one of the strategies right now for us as black people is to retreat. That's a part of war, you know. Retreat. See? Regroup, retreat, and regroup. Because something is going to happen again. We're going to see another atrocity. Right? We know that. We live in America. We know that. Something probably more grotesque than what we saw is going to take place. See? And we don't know what that combustion is going to be like. You see? Because it's like a powder keg right now. So, but I think I say retreat and regroup. It's not being, you say, he who fights and run away lives to fight another day. Okay? We're not going to win dealing with this man here. I don't think we have the organizational right now to deal with him. It's just spontaneous combustion, as you say. And then, as you say, the leadership is being co-opted by other groups. See? So, you know, again, I say, retreat and regroup. Good brothers, thank you very much for this program.
Thank you for your contribution, Brother Marcus.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Wow. Let's go to 646. 646, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Richard, let me share this article here with the listening audience and for the remaining time we have on the show, if another caller want to get involved, they can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Let me share this article here in reference to these police departments. It says, and this came from The Intercept. It says, when the people hit the streets in outrage, it was the job of the police to enter their neighborhoods in armored trucks with heavy tactical gear. This is not a small part of their job. You may be familiar with the 1997 bill supported by former Vice President Joe Biden that assisted police departments around the country in acquiring military gear and armored vehicles. The 1033 program helped to ship more than $7.4 billion worth of excess military equipment to over 8,000 police agencies across the country. Even school districts have obtained weapons and tactical gear such as rifles, extended magazines, automatic pistols, armor plating, tactical vests, SWAT gear, mine-resistant ambush protective vehicles, and grenade launchers. Weapons such as these are now being deployed against citizens in cities across the country. Police officers are trained in domestic counterinsurgency because this is their job. This is why the Minneapolis Police Department defied a ban from Mayor Jacob Frey in order to give officers warrior training. When the police broke down the door of Breonna Taylor's home in Louisville, Kentucky, it took evidence in a narcotics investigation. They were doing their job. Taylor was an EMT. It was her job to save lives, but it was not the job of the police department to protect her life. The Louisville Metro Police Department has responded by saying that the police officers did their job. They knocked on the door several times and announced themselves before entering Breonna Taylor's home. This article talks about that bill that was, I guess it was co-sponsored or signed by then Biden
mm-hmm.
In 1997, the 1033 program. Let me put 1033 program. Now, here we go again. Now, he was one of the authors of the crime bill that decimated black families and put generations, fathers, grandfathers, and children in prison, enslaved, in modern-day slavery. And now he authored some bill in 1997, or co-sponsored the bill, that put tactical weapons in these police departments' hands.
They were trying to remove.
It's clear that he's part of the system. I mean, come on, how people got to keep a scorecard on these people? You know, you keep hearing some of these mouthpieces for the Democratic Party, and I'm talking about the black ones. I ain't talking about the white ones. Keep telling these people, we see that you don't, come on here. Stop the madness. Now, it mentioned about that this bill that he signed not only put the weapons in these police departments, but allowed them to have all types of special training.
Mm-hmm.
That was paid for by government and city money. If you remember when we talked about this last week, and I mentioned about usually when you have a job, union and management are adversaries. They're not on the same page, because union usually represents the employees and management is like that's the guy they always fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
But in these cities, these police unions and the local municipalities are on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
They fund one another. They work in concert with one another. Sure, when something like this happens, then they act like they're in adversarial positions. But that's only for public consumption or public view. Now, let me, because this 1033 program that Biden helped sponsor put, according to this article, put gear in schools and also paid for specialized training. And usually when you catch these politicians, both black and white, in something that they know is going on, then they try to backtrack, do a little soft shoe, and act like they're correcting the situation. Let me read from this article here. It says, Senator aims to end military equipment program used by school police. It says, Democratic senator wants to end a federal program that transfers military equipment to local enforcement agencies, including many school police departments. Criticism of the program, known as 1033, resurged this weekend as protests shared photos of police donning heavy tactical gear to respond to demonstrators over the death of Minneapolis man George Floyd. Some of the concerns were surfaced in 2014 when police in Ferguson sparked national conversation about the appropriate use of force in responding to a public demonstration. Senator Brian Schwartz revised a proposal to eliminate the 1033 program altogether. Lawmakers in both parties had previously introduced similar positions. The database from the Defense Department shows that tactical gear and weapons from the 1033 program have been provided to school police departments in at least 22 districts and 8 states, California, Florida, Georgia, Nevada, Texas, and Utah. Surplus equipment provided to police in these districts as large as 654,000 students in Los Angeles School District include M14s, M16 rifles, extended magazines, automatic pistols, armor-plated and tactical vests, SWAT gear, mine-resistant ambush protection, and MRAP vehicles, and grenade launchers, which are used by police agencies to deploy tear gas and smoke in crowd situations. Well, it says that they kind of doctor them. Instead of launching grenades, they'll use them to launch tear gas. School-based police agencies have received this equipment from the Defense Department, says that it was mostly used in the event of a mass shooting. A spokesman for the Defense Department said that some school agencies may have acquired equipment that would likely only use in cooperation with other law enforcement agencies in a school environment. So these schools was obtained. Oh, wait a minute. Let me read this last part. In response to the concerns about 1033, and when it was shown that police had this equipment during Ferguson, President Obama signed an executive order that placed limits on the program, including restrictions on the acquisition by law enforcement agencies operating in K-12 school districts. In 2017, Donald Trump rescinded the executive order. So, like I said before, when you catch these politicians, they do a fast soft shoe. Now, Obama signed an order that they can't use certain of these type of weapons or give the school certain of these type of weapons in a K-12 school. It didn't cut the program out altogether. And it just says that Trump came in and just lifted the restrictions so they can get what they was getting before. So, you know, what's the difference? If you being beat on the plantation with a belt and you can get the bullwhip back, you're still being beat.
Yeah.
Now, that was the school. It said the 1033 program not only gave money to these departments and tactical weapons to departments, but provided them to schools and also provided specialized training. Now, let's look at that specialized training part of it, Richard. And I'm going to go right to Minneapolis. Now, this article was from April of last year. It says Minneapolis Police Federation and Mayor Jacob Frey accused each other of misrepresenting an agreement over the union reached with police chief last week, capping a contentious week over the mayor's efforts to assert control over the officers' training. The dispute centers on a new policy prohibiting officers from participating in warrior-style instruction, training that emphasizes the ever-present threat of officer survival, even while off-duty. The policy, which was announced last week at his State of the City address, requires officers to get approval before enrolling in the use of force training outside the department. Frey said that all the training deemed fear-based would be rejected by police leadership, and any other officer caught attending anyway would face discipline. The union responded this week by openly defying the mayor. Hold on a second. All right. The union responded this week by openly defying the mayor. The federation, which represents roughly 900 rank-and-file officers, announced a partnership with the Law Enforcer, a national police organization, to offer free warrior-style training for officers available for the remainder of Frey's term in office. The announcement came with a statement from the union president, Lieutenant Bob Kroll, who says he's proud to embrace warrior training. So we see here that when that officer, Muhammad Noor, when the spotlight was turned on him when he killed that white woman, they talked about this warrior training that the city was paying for along with government funds from this 1033 program that the mayor wanted to cut the funds for and penalize officers if they was caught taking this training. So the police union said, okay, you cut the funds. We're going to go to a national police organization that's going to pay for it free of charge. So their officers could still take these type of trainings. Now, here's a question, Richard. Do you think, being that this was in Minnesota, do you think that officer or any of those four officers had that warrior training? I bet you they did.
Oh, definitely.
I bet you they did. Where you can learn all types of specialized tactics, where you can put a guy to death. It's too many of these cops. Next thing you know, black people talking about, I can't breathe. And then they're expiring. It's too many of these cops that know these specialized moves, holes, and everything else, where they didn't cut off your oxygen, cut off blood flow, and the next thing you know, the man expires. They take pleasure in doing that. That guy, he took pleasure in having his knee in a specialized position where 8 minutes later, this brother lost his life.
You got all these specialized training, not only weapons, specialized training that your tax dollars as black citizens pay for, and these people abusing and killing our own people.
Mm-hmm.
Money that been provided for schools that has these specialized weapons, grenade launchers and tactical vests and all this other stuff. The only places that's having these mass killings in school is in these white communities. They ain't going in the black schools, one kid going in there shooting up, killing, mass murdering students in schools. That's happening in these white schools. And they don't go in there with necessarily no tactical vests. In fact, mm-hmm. you don't even see that. You don't even see those type of protections in those schools. Because mm-hmm. they don't want their children going to schools where they got to pass metal detectors and got cops in there with guns. They don't want their children learning in an environment like that. But they don't mind sticking them in your schools. I went in my old high school, and this is about 4 years ago. Man, you had to put, you get pat down. They give you a wand. They do the wand thing. And then you go through a darn metal detector.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, what the hell? Where I'm going into prison?
Yeah.
But if you go in these white schools, they barely have a guard in there. And if they do have a guard, he don't have no gun. He got a walkie-talkie. This whole system is corrupt.
Hey, it's
and our people don't need to settle for no Band-Aid. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's a military. It's falling under as a military state. Well, it is. I mean, but it's now what we're seeing in Philadelphia and what Southwest Philadelphia and other parts is, you know, when you got the reserves walking around, I mean, they're patrolling the street, right?
Oh, you talking about vigilantes?
No, the National
Guard. Okay. I'm sorry. Well, you know, they did have some vigilantes walking around. They had the guns and baseball bats and everything else.
All right, but this orientates the people that this is normal. You know, others would said at another point used to have patrol police that walk. I mean, they're not riding like the cops do, that you can never see because they sitting on some parking lot, especially at nights. You know. Drinking some Dunkin' Donuts, and that's why it takes so many to bring down somebody, you know. But they're strategically placed. So what does that say as far as the orientation of the community itself in accepting that?
Well, you know, before we let me go to this next call. Let me read this. This came from another article. That same month in Minnesota, this was last year, well, a year before Floyd is killed. It says, in defiance of Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, the union that represents the city, roughly 900 rank-and-file police officers, announced that it is partnering with a national police organization to offer free warrior-style training for any officer who wants it, according to the news release posted by the Law Officer website. The free online training, valued at $55,000 a year, is offered to officers as long as Frey remains mayor. The training, which covers a range of issues from officer survival and leadership to fitness and de-escalation, was designed to ensure that officers could return home each day to their family, regardless of the dangers that they may face in the streets. The announcement comes in response to Frey's ban of the popular training style, which was first revealed in the State of the City address last week. Frey said at the time that Minneapolis would become the first department in the country to eliminate the fear-based training. Now, he said the first department in the country to eliminate it because they didn't want to fund it anymore. And I guess maybe the federal funds, they didn't want to use city funds for it. So being at the federal fund, the national police union said that they would pick up the tab. So wait a minute. If he said that they would be, according to this published report, they wanted to become the first department in the country to eliminate the fear-based training. That means there's other cities that's doing this specialized training. How come we don't hear about it? How come it's not heard about in other cities where you got black elected officials at? They see these city budgets. They know what's going on. How come their community is not aware that these police officers is going through specialized training? And what is entailed in this specialized training? You don't know it. Who knows it? And if black officers know it, why don't they reveal it to some of the people in their neighborhoods about what's going on? Instead of having this blue, so-called blue wall of silence that they don't rat on these old white bigots that's in these police departments. They work right alongside them. We got two calls online before we end up. Richard, let me go back to 646 and see if they're there. 646.
Hey, what's going on, Richard and Elliot? Listen, right quick, I know time is short. You know, I don't know if y'all noticed what's going on with these protesters, man. The majority of these protesters are white.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what's happening is most of their position that they're taking is based on their inability to be able to make the type of living that they're accustomed to and expect to now and in the future. Because the reality is, things are never going to be the same. There's a group of people who clearly understand that. And based on the things that they do and that they are a part of, it's coming to light. And when it comes to light, you gotta realize and see what your position is. And their position don't look good, if the truth be told. And, you know, the bottom line is we gotta figure out what is our position in this equation and what is our position gonna be now that it looks like things are opening up and we really don't know what's gonna happen. Because you don't know where this virus is gonna go now that, you know, we've had people out here marching and protesting and not dealing on the level of social distancing everybody's been talking about. So I just want to see what's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, you ain't the only one. I know it.
So, I mean, if this thing ramps up in the next 2 to 3 weeks, it's going to be crazy. Because I see now, starting on Monday, they talking about increasing the service on mass transit.
But if it don't ramp up, it'll be the same thing. Because if it don't ramp up, that means that it was for the last 10 weeks that they had everybody on lockdown saying that it was going to ramp up if we were in close proximity to each other. Now you have this, you know, all over the country, especially in large urban areas, but black and white who have been in close proximity over long period of times, and primarily a quote unquote younger cohort. This is almost bigger than the ones that's been going to the beaches and been saying that they've been, wanted to go to the stores. So if they don't get it, what does that say as far as what was the severity of this virus? Because what changed? They didn't say that the virus changed. They just ain't said nothing.
Well, I mean, now is going to be the real show of if it was a real pandemic, if it wasn't a pandemic, and what's to come in the future and how they're going to handle it in the future. Because if in the next 3 to 4 weeks, everything seems to be partially normal, how are they going to respond when things, let's say, ramp up in December, January, and February, if that becomes the case? So, I mean, there's a lot of things in play, but you also have to take into consideration a lot of these white people that's out here protesting had low service jobs, if the truth be told, working in restaurants, maybe going to school, working in retail, things of that nature. And I mean, I'll be honest with you, I can never see myself going in to a restaurant and sitting down having a meal. I just won't do it. And I definitely won't do it during the period of summer because of the whole situation with the air conditioning. And I definitely won't do it in the winter. So, I mean, I'm not going in no pork chop chicken eating institution anyway. And, hey, listen, I ain't trying to go in no movie theater also. So, I mean, to be honest, the places in the way that I roll, I'm not trying to be in big crowds anyway. So, I mean, hey, but everybody's not going to act like that. I mean, just look at what's going on in bars. Now I heard that the casinos are opening up. Now, I'm the type of person, I've gone to Atlantic City to play poker. I've been to Las Vegas to play poker. But I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I'll do it now. I don't think I will.
Well, they were lining up to get in. Vegas opened up the other day. They were lined up.
Yeah. I know I'm not going to the Garden to watch my beloved Knicks. I don't care if they get good. I ain't going to Giants Stadium. You know, the last time that I was in a crowd, when I think about it, it was at the Barclays to watch a fight. And I don't see myself doing that. So, I mean, you know, I don't see myself doing any of those things for the next 2 years, if I'm fortunate enough to be here. But the reality is, you know, it's just going to change the whole way society is, because I have friends of mine that work at restaurants. I have two friends of mine that own restaurants that basically they just walking away because fortunately they're not in any debt and they could just go into the catering business. Or matter of fact, the funny thing is both of them have been cooking for rich white folks and making just as good of money, and if not, more money. So, I mean, that's not what they really want to do, but that's what they're going to do. I was talking to a friend of mine that has a barbershop that I know. He's saying he don't even know what he's going to do. And the thing that's keeping him from just walking away, to be honest, is his lease. He don't want to get up in a situation to where as the landlord's going to take him to court and he got to deal with the whole breaking the lease and then messing up his credit and all of those type of things. So he don't know. But he knows that one of his barbers, and I know Elliot probably know barbers, they now do private clientele situations by going to people's houses. So, I mean, it's just totally a whole different economic climate that's going to be in place within the next year to 2 years that's going to be real interesting, man, because, you know, I don't ever see the restaurant business being the same. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in offices. Are they now going to allow a limited amount of people in the offices? How can they space out these offices? It's just right now a crazy, crazy environment on how these things are going to move forward. And you know what's the most troubling thing is? The lack of vision and leadership that we in our community have on all levels. You get nothing from your local politicians, really. You're definitely not getting nothing from the CBC. And then this thing that you have in the White House, I mean, you don't know what the hell to say about him. Because if he could get off based on these job numbers, then that just shows you how naive and dumbfounded he really is, because those numbers are so artificial, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But hey, this is what we have looking forward. I mean, like I've telling everybody that I talk to that, you know, is in my circle, I'm saying, man, hold on to your money, play everything to close to the vest, and when opportunities arise, be ready to make your move. And if you have to, just do it collectively. But hey, there's going to be a delicate turn ahead, but you got to be wise to how you're going to fit in. And if you don't feel that you could fit in, just sit back. Don't do anything that's going to put you in any type of financial danger, because the economy, as it moves forward, is not going to be able to readily help you like it has in the past, because too many things are just changing. And we don't even know how it's going to move forward, if the truth be told. So, I mean, what are we honestly as black people going to do? Because you know we the first fired, the last hired, and always mistreated. And remember, other ethnic groups got to solidify their position and make sure that they have some sort of place to go back to and be a part of this society. And you know, and I know, a lot of them were in the restaurant industry on the other undercover, and now that's not available to them. So where do they go now? So I mean, I don't know, man. These are some precarious times ahead for us as a people. And you know something, I'm sorry to say, I don't really know if we're ready for it. I don't know if we have a position or have the type of leadership to place us in a position to deal. And oh, this last thing, you know that they have raised, I think, anywhere from $13 to $30 million for the Floyd family, and you know who's overseeing it, right?
What is it, Sharpton?
Benjamin Amberlis Chasen Crump and his law firm is overseeing it.
Well, that is Sharpton.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, hey, you know. But the thing
it's
is,
your buddy.
This, now think about this. Think about this right quick. Floyd Mayweather, the boxer, gave him $85,000 for the funeral. They've raised all that money, and under the optics that it would be for the funeral, the service, the family to travel, to be able to do certain things, and for his kids. Now, I would love to see when it's all said and done, because I figured if they raise $30 million, I figure they'll probably raise another 10, which this is the largest amount ever raised for a situation like this. I want to see what are they going to do to set aside for George Floyd's kids, and then what's going to happen to the rest And what that ambulance chasing no good dirty dog, mush mouth Negro Big Crump is going to do with his take, and how much do he feel he's entitled to as his take? Because it can't be a third, brother. That's all I'm going to say. It can't be a third. The administrative cost for that is not that high. And if he even thinks about taking a third and the people find out, there should be hell to pay. So I just hope that our people are aware of it. I hope that we take heed to it. And I hope that we call him out at some point in time, because ain't no way in the hell he's supposed to get a third of that money, and ain't no way in hell he's supposed to take any type of double-figure percentage of that money to so-called oversee it. His services ain't worth no 10%. If anything, he should maybe get 3 to 5, if that much. But hey, we'll see. But I just hope that they take care of the man's kids, because I don't know how many he had, but I would assume he had more than the one that I've seen.
When they showed the son and the little girl, Stephen Jackson is her goddaughter. That's his goddaughter. Yeah, but they showed the son. The son looked like he was maybe 20 years old.
Okay, so that's two right. That's two right there, and I would assume maybe he may have another one or something like that. But you know, like I said, we in for interesting times. Matter of fact, Brother Elliot, how are you doing? And how is Richard? Are you opening up soon, Elliot, or are you just gonna play it by ear?
No, well, I'm gonna wait until they give the order. You know, I don't want to go in there before that.
Have they given any of the black businesses or any of the businesses in Philly an idea on when they're going to allow y'all to open back up?
They haven't. There's rumors out that because I think Jersey, the 22nd, that they're going to go back. So I think it'll be around that time, personally, because Jersey was hit worse than Philadelphia.
So that would be, let's say, another 2 or 3 weeks, which will be interesting based on the activities that's been going on in Philly. We'll get an idea. So, I mean, listen, I'm like this, man. If it's no rush to go open back up, man, it may not be something that one should do if it's no rush. And let this play out for at least till, I would say, the middle of July, the 1st of August, to get a better feel on, you know, what this so-called pandemic really is based on the weather patterns. Because I tell you, man, in New York, it's been a little bit humid as hell today. It was real humid, you know? So, I mean, we'll see. But look, hopefully you'll have a guest on Sunday and, you know, I definitely hope the Brother Boyd gets a chance to come back on in regards to the farming, because, man, I know there's some interesting things going on with them, because I don't know if you've noticed, Brother Elliot and Richard, the food prices are increasing, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It'll be an interesting conversation.
I'm not talking about meat and things of that nature. I'm just talking about vegetables and fruits and things of that nature. Man, when you catch something on sale, you got to try and bulk it and freeze it or do something, because, I mean, the prices are ridiculous. You know what I mean? And I know that there's been some issues in regards to migrant workers coming in to pick the vegetables in Florida, Texas, California, and things of that nature. And to be honest with you, those things don't really affect the food supply till around July, August, and September. So, Lord, have mercy. If you paying something now, just imagine in another 2 to 3 months, say to yourself, every item that you're looking to purchase, there may be anywhere from a 30 to a 50 cent increase. And you know they're about to hit the mass transit in all of these cities because of the money they lost. I know in New York, it's probably going to go from 275 to 325 and maybe 350, depending on what happens if your boy get reelected. You know? So, I mean, interesting times are ahead, man.
All right.
Listen, y'all have a good night, man. And, Richard, I'm glad to know that you on the internet enjoying yourself and that you don't have to be under the cloud of the daddy hanging over your head, man. You must really be enjoying yourself with your little fingers typing on the keyboards.
I don't know about all that, but yeah.
Later.
Have a good night, brothers.
Peace.
I know.
You know, before we go to the next call, Brother Otis said that Floyd had three children, two girls and a son. Yeah, I see he left that message there. Let's go to 215. 215.
Good evening to you, Elliot, and also to you, Richard. I had a couple comments that I wanted to make, and I wanted to see really what y'all opinions of them were. One of y'all had made a comment earlier in the show about how we as people now need to start thinking strategically. And, you know, I agree with that wholeheartedly. A couple of things I was thinking of, you know, especially over the last week, you know, seeing some of the protests that have been taking place. Some of these protests you've had almost maybe in certain cities, maybe almost as many whites out protesting as blacks. I want to see what your opinions are about this. Now, I was thinking that, I said, you know, there's a possibility because this virus is still running rampant all across the world, especially here in this country. They've already talked about how in different states over the last maybe 10 to 14 days you've had spikes. I said, suppose some of these people knew, especially some of these whites knew that they were sick, came out to these protests just to purposely infect other people. You know, I think that, you know, we, especially during times like this, anything is possible. Now, some people might say, ah, that's a little far-fetched. I don't think nobody would do that and everything. Listen, we living in times now where the far-fetched needs to be thought of. Far-fetched needs to be thought of. You know, I also thought to myself, I said, you know, a lot of these companies, that's some of these major corporations, that all of a sudden now they, you know, I heard you mention that they were jockeying for position to get ads on the air. Well, a lot of these, especially over the several months, a lot of these major corporations have been hurting for money because the economy went flatline. Especially when all these major cities are closed down, not just here in this country, but around the world. So a lot of these major companies and everything are looking for a ploy to get this economy, give a boost back into this economy. They're looking at it in a way where maybe this is the perfect opportunity. We start putting these ads out because they know with black folks, we'll spend our money basically with anybody. I mean, if a dog open up a store in our community, a corner store, we'll go in there and pay him, pay the dog and everything for groceries and stuff like that. So they already know that black folks will spend their money with anybody under any circumstances. I think that these companies are saying, well, listen, this is a perfect opportunity to get this, since a lot of these states and these major cities are starting to open back up, this is a perfect opportunity to get this economy boosted again. Black folks start seeing these ads. They already know a lot of times that we think and act emotionally anyway. So they'll feel as though we got their back and we supporting them and everything because they donate a couple million dollars to NAACP or something like that. You know, they're thinking, well, we'll show support for them. They'll show support for us and help us get this economy back together. But those are just some of the things that I, you know, been thinking. I didn't want to take too much time because I know it's getting near the end of the, you know, the show. But I wanted to see what y'all opinion was of what I just said.
Richard?
I mean, they're as far as the being, you know, human, what's your, like, the impression I got is the human disease blankets, spreading the disease. I'm going to just say that's a possibility. It's interesting. That's a possibility. Cause as you heard with the last call, my thoughts is what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks to see just to, you know, we've had discussion in our community, whether the virus is real or not at all. So,
right.
with you know, in the next 2 weeks, we'll get to see. And
yeah,
and,
especially when the numbers start coming back in.
Right, right. And if they, and I'm on the side of if the numbers don't come, what is the reaction? Because, you know, people have lost their jobs. I don't, you know, you raise another one as far as the companies themselves, but I'm hold on to another position in relationship to that, especially large companies. But what is the reaction of Black folks, young Black folks who will get to see, especially those who are somewhat motivated, motivated that the previous numbers of when they were saying Black people are, that was because young Black people were carrying on two or three jobs.
Right.
You know, and then to find out that this really wasn't, because they consider themselves responsible. They consider themselves motivated, you know, and they're consider themselves hardworking. And to find out that they may have lost their job, been placed in an economic disadvantage around a virus that really wasn't a virus. How are they going to respond to that? that's the piece. On the other side, if they get sick and have no, you know, how they're going to deal with that, because down there they don't have no income and possibly may not have no medical, you know, because they still want you to have insurance,
right.
And that's why they're telling you to stay home and, you know, nurse through this pain yourself. And then, if, you know, that whole thing, that's I know that's different than the scenario that you paint as far as a kind of virus bomber, you know, intentional bomber, you know, and even that, based off of the numbers that came out, that the effect would be on more whites who were going back to these enclaves that are not necessarily in the city, because they came into the city,
right,
or into gentrified communities.
Yeah, it'll be taking them back to suburban neighborhoods also.
Right, right. It'll be if that the scenario plays out, that's what that. For me, for the corporate, you know, and we've been wrestling with this. And we said it earlier in the discussion about, you know, and we've had people, you know, on and speaking to us about, and I hold this kind of position. We have no income. We have no wealth. So I can't see that the corporate direction is to get to move towards income, to get Black income or wealth. And if it is, it's only that I call it the top two-fifths of the population, who have some disposable, but not a lot, but they have some disposable income and a wealth, and that's not a large demographic. So to speak to the scenario you paint, you're painting, which still is a possibility, but all the numbers I see is saying Black folks as an aggregate doesn't have income or have wealth. So the thing that I'm looking at, or I get to, you know, if you don't mind me just bouncing off again, being repeat, I see that I'm an advocate that the global political economy of white domination is in transition. You know, and so the large corporations are part of that transition, and that is global, and it's also in competition. And its major competitor is Southeast Asia as a general, you know, not Southeast Asia. It would have been the whole Southern Hemisphere and Africa, but Southeast Asia and China specifically. That's who they're, this whole, the race. And that the wealth factor, what is wealth, is changing. Where it might have been material goods, now it is data. And you can see United States and China are positioning even more than Russia around in the race towards harnessing and manipulating or creating mechanisms to create more wealth out of data by extracting it. Now, Black people globally still becomes a natural resource in data, especially when we're talking about at the genetic level. If, you know, because our, especially on the continent, the gene variation of Black people is the most various, is the most diverse on the planet. And if you're going to create pharmaceuticals, synthetic drugs, or even try to come up with new forms of things, then you need a natural resource that has more variations than others. And Africans particularly have that. So the reorganization, they call it the Fourth Industrial Revolution as far as white domination, and China are in competition, not just for the natural land resources on the continent, but for the biological resources, the biological data resources of the continent. And that's where I see the race is. And you see that with, the trade war that was before this that Trump pushed out. And you see it with that, even to have the Wuhan thing about having the viruses have to be created through fourth generation, fourth class incubator system. I forget the technical term where they stand, more importantly, through this thing they're talking about, the fifth generation wireless, or
the 5G.
That's
5G, right.
And the company that they were, they're seeing that China supported as a nation state, it had an advantage, and it had its tentacles not only in United States and its enterprise infrastructure, but also in Europe and in Southeast Asia. And they've been trying to hold that back, and that's why they got the daughter held up there in Canada now. That's what I'm saying.
I think you asked a couple questions about the folks maybe coming into the area and spreading the virus intentionally. I don't know. I have no clue how this virus is spread, or how the weather affects the virus. I reached out to the head of the Black Doctors Consortium that's been testing in the black community here in Philadelphia, Alma, okay. Sanford, to try to get her on the program to kind of talk about this virus and whether hot weather, 80s, 90s, affects the virus or the spread of the virus. I don't know. I do know this. I got a friend of mine that was an official up there at the prisons up there on State Road here in Philadelphia. There's five prisons up there. One of them closed down, House Correction, or Conesburg, one of them closed down up there and had been vacant. And they moved prisoners to other buildings. But when they arrested about 800 protesters, supposedly 800, they used two floors in that. And then the reason they was depopulated or was taking a lot of people out of the prisons up there is because of the COVID had spread in those prisons up there on State Road. So they was releasing a lot of the people and releasing them into the community without testing. One of the jails that had been closed up there, they housed prisoners, the people that they had arrested, on two floors of, I think it was either Holmesburg or House of Correction. That's up there on State Road. And, you know, and the virus was in those areas. So you got people in close proximity to one another in a jail setting, especially in an old prison like that. That was held up there. I don't know how many days they was held up there. In fact, some of them might still be there, especially if they were, some of those white suburbanites might have gotten out. But some of the blacks that might have been involved in it, they might still be there. So you don't know. I don't know. I'd like to find out how this virus is spread and whether the heat has anything to do with maybe the numbers being lower. I don't know. I hopefully we'll have somebody on here to kind of speak to that issue. The other thing about some of these companies, I do agree with Richard about the wealth. It's clear that our people don't have the wealth that other communities have. But we do, the money that we do have, we spend it. And it's clear that we do. Because these other nationalities that the United States brings into this country, they show them a way where they can get money quickly. And they direct these nationalities, whether it be
right Asian, for our neighborhoods.
Yeah, exactly. They direct them to our neighborhoods, whether they're Latinos, whether they're Asians, Jews was in the neighborhoods before, straight out Anglos. Everybody can come to the black neighborhood and set up shop and really do well because we might not have wealth, but we got money in these areas, and the money that we do have, we spend it. So these companies know, I mean, they might, they know where people are spending the money. A lot of these, Nike and all these places, them sneakers is very expensive. But black people are buying them. They're buying them.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of these companies, some of these Fortune 500 companies, or that article I read about 50 companies are trying to cater to, but they're doing that for a reason. And they ain't doing it because black people are no friend of theirs. But their money is a friend of theirs. And however much they got, they might, like I said, they might not have the wealth, but they do spend the money that they have.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree. And the, you know, the way I look at it is like this. You know, we'll see very soon. I feel as though basically when I see Joe Biden coming out and, you know, all of a sudden now he's Black Lives Matter and, you know, George Floyd and everything, every other word is about George Floyd now. I see it's coming down now, and I hope that a lot of our people see the same thing because we're being played every day, all day, and it's either for one or two things, either for financial gain or political gain, and sometimes it's both. So, like I said, we'll see very soon what the results of, you know, so, you know, you hear some of these organizations and different people coming out talking about police departments all across the country need to be reformed and all that type of nonsense and everything. You know, these things have been happening before George Floyd. These people knew about it. The NFL, all these other people, all these other organizations, they knew about it. They knew about it and everything. So, like I said, we'll see how some of these things go, and we'll be able to see actually very soon. You know, but you know, thank you for taking my call. Like I said, I didn't want to hold y'all up. I know it's getting near the end of the show, but I just wanted to mention those couple of things just to see what y'all thought about them.
Thank you for your contribution.
Take care.
All right, take care.
Richard, we come up to the end of another program tomorrow on Time for an Awakening Media from 4 to, wait a minute. Yes, yeah, because it's 3 to 5 in their time, Richard. But it's 4 to 6 on Time for Awakening Media, the Black Reality Think Tank, which is the ladies hosting their program on Saturdays. Will be on tomorrow on Time for an Awakening Media from 4 to 6. Black Reality Think Tank Part 2, I'll call it. The ladies will be on tomorrow. Check out their program. And I think within the next couple of weeks, a part of that Black Reality Think Tank, the elders will speak. And I think their program will be airing on Saturday evenings from 6 to 8, if I'm not mistaken. I'll get that time straight. But their program will be coming on in a couple of weeks, the elders program. So it'll be interesting dialogue on Saturday, Richard. We never really had like dialogue on Saturday, but it'll be interesting. The ladies have been doing a pretty nice program there the past 2-3 weeks. They've been broadcasting, I think, a month now. It'll be a month tomorrow. I don't know whether you've caught, I think you've mentioned you caught one of their programs, but they've had some interesting subject matter. And I think he had one of the gentlemen on that'll be hosting the elders round table. So it'll be interesting dialogue on Saturday evenings, also on Time for an Awakening. But catch the program tomorrow on 4 to 6 on time on Saturdays on Time for an Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. A lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. Why can't we do something to try and solve it?
better then to save the children, to save the children.